Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, in the Dash Radio app, on the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Matt, I hate to do this again because we just did this at the beginning of yesterday's show, but it seems like that Derrick Rose, for whatever reason, this week in Bulls history has all of a sudden blown up out of nowhere. 670 spent two segments on it this past Wednesday. It's kind of crazy. Anytime you bring up Derrick Rose's name, especially in this city, it seems to pop off for news stories, whether it's 2-3 days. Social media has a weird way of connecting fans. And it's like we continue to get retweets and quote tweets of people reminiscing about this game, but I thought it was pretty cool. And other stations are picking it up and spending whole segments about it and letting callers call in and talk about this sort of era that started with the Miami Heat rivalry back then.
Yeah, and really that game in particular, they as you mentioned, they were chatting about this on Spiegel and Parkins on Wednesday afternoon on 670 The Score, and how that win in particular, that late February 2011 win at the Madhouse where D. Rose and Lou Wall and Joe Keem beat the Heatles, was kind of like the first glimpse of Bulls fans believing that this team had what it took to win a title or get to the finals at least, because that was the big team in their way, right? That Heat team that they showed they were capable of beating. And it's crazy. I mean, you mentioned the insane amount of social media reaction we got from that little highlight reel from that Bulls Heat game. I think it's funny to note that D Wade, so a lot of people have quoted that video of ours, that This Week in Bulls video, Bulls history video, with their own commentary on it. It's like saying, oh, I was at this game, or man, it's so unfortunate about D Rose, or I miss this team, et cetera, et cetera. D Wade saw one of those, like a quote of our tweet, and then quoted that, saying, yeah, that was some pretty god-awful help defense on my part. I should have stayed over on my man, Lou Wall, who buried that three. But so I'm pretty sure that D. Wade quoting that video had something to do with the fact that it's gotten, you know, like, I don't know, like 4,000 likes and 2,000 retweets at this point, which is crazy. But you're right, man. Everybody in this city still loves talking about that team and what could have been.
Yeah, just real quick to touch on the D-Wade thing. I think it's funny, and it was retweeted, and actually it was quote tweeted by a guy named Chef Trilly on Twitter. He's got about 9,000 followers. Seems like he's a big-time Miami Heat fan, has a lot of Heat following. That one has over 5,000 likes on it too right now, so that's sort of where it sparked from D-Wade. I think it's funny when players do chime in and they see this. Like we had this happen a couple weeks ago when we tweeted out a video of Michael Jordan's last game, and Jay Williams was a part of that on the Bulls team. He retweeted and left a comment. He also talked about it on a radio show and a podcast. So it's pretty cool. I like when, and this is what's so unique about the NBA too, is the players are so active on social media that it's kind of cool when this happens. Like when players, not only they see fans reminiscing about the times and where they were and the emotions that they had, but it's cool when players chime in as well, because you forget sometimes that those guys were on the court actually real live living this out. And it's cool to kind of get their perspective, even if it is just a short little tweet. It's kind of funny. You never know who's actually watching, especially on social media. And even from here, you never know who's listening and never know who's paying attention.
Yeah. And honestly, it's always nice, like you said, when you have the athletes interacting with media and the fans on that Twitter sphere, because I think that's one of the things that makes NBA so great is NBA Twitter. There's nothing like NBA Twitter and all that entails. But one of the other favorite elements of my memories of being an NBA fan watching Dwayne Wade the player, Dwayne Wade the person, is from that great Bulls Heat rivalry when he was on Twitter and said, had to laugh at this. He was at home playing Nerf basketball with his son. You know, he was like playing his son one-on-one. D Wade was on his knees. And this was after game one of the conference finals when Taj had that enormous dunk on Wade that brought the crowd to its feet. And Dwayne Wade's son yelled Taj Gibson as he was dunking over his father, Dwayne Wade, which to me is like one of the funniest things that I've ever heard in the realm of NBA social media. Like the fact that Dwayne Wade said, have to laugh at this, like can't not. And for all, look, I know you and I have criticized Wade for his stint in Chicago. It didn't work out. You know, obviously the leadership came into question. He's back in Miami. We hope he's enjoying himself there. But the one thing that I will say about Dwayne Wade positively is that the guy is quick to admit when he is wrong or when he's done something wrong. Not all the time. Clearly, he called out some Bulls players for not trying last season when he himself, the effort was being questioned. But he said, like, his immediate reaction to that Derrick Rose highlight reel was like, wow, yeah, that was some terrible defense on my part. And when his son dunked on him pretending to be Taj Gibson, he said, can't help but laugh at that.
Yeah, I know we criticize Dwayne Wade, especially if you're just the year that he was here in Chicago. And it's, like I said, like we always say, it's nothing personal. It's all straight business. It's what we're here to do, to evaluate what's going on with the Bulls and specifically on the court. I mean, that's what these guys make millions upon millions of dollars to do. So it's fair to criticize those guys. But like we said, it's nothing personal. And we've talked over and over again the positive things that he's done for the city of Chicago and all the foundations and charities that he's been a part of and been instrumental still in Chicago, in the city, especially when he was here only for a short year. So obviously it's nothing personal. The criticism is fair for where we put it. But outside of that, he is a great personality for the NBA to have, even though his peak is pretty much gone now. But it's still a great thing. Matt, before we get to our interview with David Haugh of the Chicago Tribune, I just wanted to quickly touch on John Paxson's interview on 670 The Score. He spent some time with a show he doesn't normally go on, hasn't been on for probably years now, with Jason Goff and Dan Bernstein in the afternoon. Anything from that you caught that was catching to you? Or was it just kind of the same old spiel that you figured that he was going to spew? Anything that you got, any little nuggets that you had from that interview?
Yeah, he said a lot of the same stuff we've been hearing for the last several months now. And then also what we've been hearing for the last week, which is we feel good about the fact that we chose a direction when we traded Jimmy Butler. We feel good about the young pieces we got in return when we made that trade, and that the rest of this season is about evaluating some of these young players we have that we need to make decisions on when it comes to the future of this roster and this organization. That is the company line that Paxson's been spouting for close to a year now. And so he hit all of those points, as you expect him to do in these radio spots. The one thing that I raised my eyebrow at and said, well, that's interesting, is he was asked a very tough question by Jason Goff. And I know a lot of Chicago sports fans out there, you know, Jason Goff is one of those love or hate guys. And there are a lot of people that throw shade at him on Twitter all the time. And there are a lot of people in Chicago that don't like Jason Goff and his takes. But you had to give him credit because he asked John Paxson a very difficult question, which was something along the lines of, looking back over the past few seasons, obviously people are starting to gain some more respect for this front office after most everybody had bottomed out on you guys and there was no faith in the city that you guys were doing your jobs well. But looking back, what one misstep would you point out as saying, yeah, we really wish we could have that one back, or we really wish we had gone a different direction there, whether it was the draft, whether it was a free agent signing? And Paxson clapped back pretty quickly and aggressively saying, you know, look, I'll admit, you know, everybody, when you're in this position, you make some mistakes here and there, but I feel good about where we are now. And then he, you know, continued to spin it the way he has normally spun it over the last year. And Jason Goff asked him a follow-up question, almost kind of interrupting Paxton, saying, no, wait, but like I asked you, give me one of the missteps that this city's fans have come at the front office for over the last couple of years. Which one would you take back? And Paxton still refused to admit, other than generically saying some missteps, he refused to bring up any specific transaction, draft pick, free agent signing by name. Refused to mention anyone as a here is where I will cite a we screwed up. And Goff gave him options, like the campaign trade. Like he rattled off a couple more, but the campaign trade was definitely there. So you can understand Paxton is not going to go on Chicago airwaves and blast a player that's on his roster right now.
Right.
But hey, guess what? The front office also kind of blasted Nico Mirotić by telling everybody it was partially his fault that he got punched in the face. So if Paxton's willing to say that kind of stuff, or at least leak that kind of stuff, take a stand and answer the damn question.
Well, that's more so about his players, too. Like, it's easier to say something about somebody else than it is about yourself, especially when it comes to missteps or taking fault or taking blame for something. Like, obviously, this isn't anything new from John Paxton either. Like, I remember specifically after the season with the Rondo, the Wade, and the Butler last year, specifically in the summer, I remember Nick Friedell asking him a question about, like, roster moves and like, why do they think that this meddling is still going to continue? And he was quick to clap back at Nick and wasn't happy about the question that he asked. I think it's just his mentality overall. And that's exactly what what Goff and Bernstein said too. It's just, it's kind of the kind of player he was. It's the kind of manager it's the kind of guy that he is. And that's just his personality. The one thing that I think I rose my eyebrows at this, that same thing too. I thought, I was curious to see what Jason Goff was going to say, because I know, I'm a fan of both of them. I'm a fan of Jason Goff and I'm a fan of Dan Bernstein. I like what they do on their show, and I think that they conduct great interviews. So that's why I was wondering leading up to this interview whether or not he was actually still going to hold his ground and say the things that he said when John Paxton wasn't on the airwaves, and he stuck to his guns and didn't. And I appreciate that. Appreciate that from any reporter that's going to go in there and not softball it or say one thing and then turn around and say another to their face. So I appreciate that. But yeah, I mean, like John Paxton, he's going to have to continue to answer these questions until things, especially recent memory, is erased by Bulls. And whether that comes sooner rather than later, I think for them, if they're hoping that this comes sooner. For Bulls fans, obviously, we're hoping it comes sooner too, so we can forget about the meddling Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose saga that went on, especially back in 2014 to 2016, 2017. But yeah, I thought overall it was a good interview. It's what I expected from it. We'll see how it plays out too. We'll see, you know, we could be maybe pleasantly surprised by some people and some guys that are going to get some heavily weighted minutes here coming in the last 25 games.
Definitely. And the other thing that I'll mention really quickly, and then we'll get to our David Haw interview. And this is actually something that we do talk with David about briefly, is that Paxton said in this interview, we're not going to just bench our trio of Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen in the fourth quarter of a close game because we're going to try to lose that game. Obviously, you know, Fred's the one on the sidelines every night. He's, you know, and this goes back to the conversation you and I had in Wednesday's episode about who's calling the shots exactly. But when it's in game, Hoiberg is making the calls as who's in and who's off the floor. So while I do believe that Paxton is trying to not so secretly, quote-unquote, tank while not saying that word, because we found out from Mark Cuban what that will cost you. The Bulls aren't going to be so egregiously tanking that, hey, if they are playing in the fourth quarter of a game and Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen, none of the three have reached their plateau of playing too many minutes that night, Hoiberg's going to have them in there. So, yes, the change between sitting Rolo and Holiday and inserting Nwaba and Felicio and swapping out Payne for Grant as a backup point guard, all of those bend towards the tank. But on any given night during any given game, that trio of guys that are capable of winning games when they're playing on the court together, they may very well be out there in the fourth quarter of close games, and that's something the Bulls fans have to accept.
And see, I could appreciate that too, because the guys got to learn how to win close games, and we've seen it. We've seen them lose out, like the game in Indiana back in November, and we've seen them win close games and battle and not back down, like the triple overtime win or triple overtime win, and then you had the overtime losses too. So there's been a lot of close games that these guys have been in for it. So that's why I'm going to be curious to see if the Bulls are in close games, especially against competitive teams. I think that's going to intrigue me a little bit too, just to see LaVine, Markkanen, and Dunn out there all at the same time and see the way that they lead and position themselves at the end of games. So I can appreciate that from Paxson. And overall, I think what the Bulls are doing right now, I think we're taking small, very, very small, but positive steps to exactly what the front office wants and what the front office is saying that they're going to do and what Bulls fans actually want. And I think the biggest thing, if I had to applaud them for anything, it's the transparency that we're getting. Like even since draft night leading up to now, you know, it might not be completely 100% transparent, but at least we're getting transparent. We're seeing from the inside, not snarling remarks and the same old BS that just drone tired, and Bulls fans hated that. And that's part of the reason why they started the billboard thing. Like that all plays into a factor of this. So finally, we're getting some transparency and some consistency from the front office that we haven't seen for a long time now.
It's true. It's funny to use the word transparency. And Paxson said it himself in that interview. I'm always trying to be as transparent as possible because we all know what's going on. They're using player evaluation as you know, translate whatever language you're talking about, subtext, whatever you want to call it, for, yeah, they're going to try to lose some games here down the stretch. So in a funny way, technically, they're not being transparent because he's saying one thing and we're all talking about a very different thing. But at least we all are on the same page and we know what's happening. We know that he and Fred Hoiberg can't say the word tank. And that's fine because we all are on the same page as far as what's happening right now.
Well, without further ado, let's get to our interview with Chicago Tribune's David Haw. It was a great interview. Had a lot of fun with him talking Bulls, all things Bulls related. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at David Haw. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. But without further ado, here's the interview with David Haw.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome to the Locked On Bulls podcast for the first time, David Haw. You know him, you read his stuff in the Chicago Tribune sports page every day. You can follow him also on Twitter at David Haw. Dave, what's going on, buddy? How you doing out there in Arizona?
Spring training is here, and it's definitely nice to be away from the cold weather, you would think. But it's actually yesterday was warmer in Chicago than it was in Arizona. So who knows? But yeah, it's baseball season, it's basketball season. Everything's merging together.
Exactly. I know your focus right now is out there in Arizona, but we have to steal you for today's episode to talk some Bulls basketball because you have been around this Bulls team in recent years just about as much as anybody else here in Chicago. And first thoughts, obviously the big news during our All-Star break here is that John Paxson came out earlier this week, spoke to the media and said, here's the plan moving forward. We're going to sit some of the vets like Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday. We're going to give minutes. We're going to give starts to David Nwaba and Cristiano Felicio, and we're going to give backup point guard minutes and duties to Campaign coming off the bench. What are your thoughts about this move?
Well, it's consistent, and I think that it's practical, and it certainly is defensible. But I'm on record as writing and saying, you know, I am not a big fan of orchestrated losing, and I don't think that I have really come to accept, like I think probably the majority of people accept the idea that it's okay to, you know, to do things in the name of losing. Now, John Paxson would argue with you that this is, you know, falls under that category, but I think it kind of does. I think everybody kind of knows what's going on here. You know, I get it, Matt, and I understand the arguments for getting into the top four draft positions and the higher the better, and this is a generational draft, and all those things are well and good, and I'm not even going to argue with anybody about it. But I also would just remind people that the drafts are projections, and you know, there's no guarantee that if you pick, you know, a guy that you think is an impactful player and you do all these moves in the name of losing, essentially. And to some degree, maybe compromise, you know, I don't want to accuse the Bulls of compromising their integrity. I don't know that I'm there yet. But I do think that this probably takes you closer to a direction where in pro sports you have to wonder what's going on here? And I applaud the NBA for fining Mark Cuban for $600,000 for what he said. And I think everybody should be, you know, on the lookout for, you know, losing by design. I'm not a fan. And so, yeah, I get the starting lineup changes, and I think Robin Lopez and Justin Holiday, from all accounts, have taken them like professionals that they are. But I'm not going to lie to you and sit here and say, like, I'm on board with all this, and this is great, and I'm applauding it. Because I have a hard time. I wouldn't – if this were a movie and this were the scene, I wouldn't applaud. I'd just sit there and watch and maybe cringe a little.
Well, so it seems like you are saying you understand what they're going through here. And that's something that John Paxson said in a radio interview just this afternoon, is that, you know, he's trying to be transparent here and that he's not trying to BS anybody. But you mentioned the fine for Mark Cuban. Clearly, Paxson is not using the word tank, and Fred Hoiberg is not using the word tank. And Hoiberg has said repeatedly all season long, look, we're going out there, my players and I, every night, we're going to try to win. The Bulls have a fairly favorable schedule down the stretch. One of the easiest strength of schedules remaining in the league, and easier than all of the teams that they're trying to, quote unquote, chase up to the top of that tanking draft lottery. Yeah. So with that being the case, Paxson also said, look, we're not going to pull our core guys like Dunn and LaVine and Markkanen out of games if it's the fourth quarter and we're close and might accidentally win. Are you on board with something like that?
Yes, absolutely. That I would applaud, okay? Because there's a fine line here between, you know, saying that these moves bring you closer to tanking, which I abhor, okay? I don't understand the mentality of a fan, of Bulls fan, that is disappointed after a loss after a victory like the ones that they just experienced, like Zach LaVine taking over the fourth quarter and beating the Timberwolves, like Zach LaVine stealing an inbounds pass with 15 seconds to go and going down and beating the Magic. Bulls fans who didn't like that, I don't understand, and I will never understand. I'm not going to apologize for that. So if you win with your best young players, the reason you are winning, there's nothing not to like. I don't care what it does to your draft order. I don't care what it does to the standings. If you're winning now with guys that you are going to try to win with later, then you're doing the right thing, and there's nothing to be sad about. So that's what I think is a difference here. So if Pax said on the air that he's going to leave, that they plan to leave the big three in close games, that's all part of the development. And if this is in the name of development, that's why I'm not going to criticize, you know, Nwaba and Felicio getting minutes, because I think that he's trying to be transparent about the main goal, and that is developing a winning team.
You mentioned the big win that the Bulls had over the Timberwolves as we're talking with the Chicago Tribune's David Haugh here on Locked On Bulls. I was at that game, David, and my co-host Jordan, who jumped on, is here with us. He and I went to that game, and you're right. I mean, the sentiments that you're echoing here, we wanted them to win that game. It was a fun atmosphere at the UC crowd. It was an underdog. It was a David Goliath kind of thing. You had the added emotion of Tibbs and Jimmy and Taj being back in town. Nobody in that building wanted the Bulls to lose that game. So there is that element to it. But you mentioned the huge night that Zach LaVine had and the fact that he was very very key to that Bulls win. I'm curious what we've seen so far of this new trio of the Bulls core that Paxson keeps referring to, the guys that they got in the Butler trade. Who do you think has the highest ceiling? Because we've seen moments where this Bulls offense runs much more effectively with Chris Dunn than without it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Markkanen, the rookie, is who we've seen most of this season just because he's been healthy for almost all of it. But we also have seen nights like the night Zach LaVine had against the Timberwolves where he's going blow for blow with Jimmy Butler in the fourth quarter of a tight game. So they all have shown those glimpses this season. Which one are you most excited about?
I think that it's a really good debate to have. It's good that the Bulls could have it. I think that Markkanen, to me, has probably got the highest ceiling, if you ask the question that way. I think he's probably going to reach the highest level of excellence. I think that Levine's probably going to reach your highest level of explosiveness. And then I think that Dunn is maybe the guy that is the engine. You know, I think he's the one who definitely you need. It might be the most valuable of the three, only because he can make everybody else work and everything else function. So they have very defined roles. I think they'll be more clearly defined moving forward. But Markkanen, to me, he's 20 years old, and you forget that. And he doesn't have an NBA body yet. And yet he still has glimpses of dominance that show you what he can do when he actually is a professional and looks like one and, you know, takes over like one. He has had times that he's done. Levine is definitely has the intangibles. He's got everything that you want from a leader. He has everything that you want from a team guy. He has everything you want from the skill set. I'll be very curious to see how he progresses as he gets better and becomes a star, because I think he will become sort of an all-star caliber player. Jimmy Butler did that well. Jimmy Butler changed. You know, this probably is not that relevant to the Bulls' development, but it could be. I want to see how Zach LaVine handles his own success. Chris Dunn, I think, is going to be one of the toughest point guards in the league, mentally, physically, in every way.
So, David, I want to touch on a little bit about Zach LaVine, just in terms of contract. Obviously, this summer is going to be huge for him and for the Chicago Bulls. Matt and I earlier this week were kind of tossing out the idea of how much exactly Zach LaVine is going to command this summer and what the Bulls are going to have to pay him in order to retain him for a long time. So I'm just going to throw a few names out here. CJ McCollum, Bradley Beal, two of the best, arguably the best shooting guards in basketball, are commanding somewhere between $23 and $24 million a year. You get to some other names that I think were more notable and more probably compare and parallel to what Zach LaVine is in, like Victor Oladipo and Alan Crabb and Wesley Matthews. What do you anticipate the Bulls having to pay in order to keep LaVine this summer? What do you think the number is going to be?
Hard to predict the exact number, but I think the guy that you mentioned, that's the right neighborhood to shop in, because they don't really have any leverage. Zach LaVine has, you know, a lot. They've identified him as a core player. They have publicly said they want to sign him, that they plan on signing him. And they're in some ways trusting that he wants to be here as much as they want him to be here. So whatever that number arrives at, the marketplace for a guy who's young, a young core NBA player, that's going to be what they're going to have to pay. It's going to be a contract that opens a lot of eyes in Chicago, and then it's going to be rationalized and justified, I think, because it is the price of playing poker in the NBA. Stakes have gone up.
While we're talking about what exactly the Bulls will be paying Zach LaVine this summer, obviously the guy who is going to be at the forefront of that negotiations from the Bulls organization side of the table is Gar Forman. And David, I'm not sure if you caught Paxson's interview on 670 this afternoon, but he was asked a question about the sort of growing distance, I guess, between the defined roles of what does John Paxson do and what does Gar Forman do for this organization. And it's become clear since the Butler trade that Paxson has taken the forefront and the lead as far as communicating with the media, communicating with Chicago sports fans through these various interviews, and trying to explain to everybody in this city what exactly the plan is, and handling some of the bigger picture stuff. And Gar Forman is a guy that he still has a lot of faith in when it comes to handling day-to-day, whether that be communicating and negotiating with agents and players when it comes to contractual matters, and also going out and handling scouting duties for this team that's young and trying to build young pieces right now. In your mind, and you're a guy who has interviewed both Gar Forman and John Paxson a number of times for your writing with the Trib, Do you feel good about the sort of newly defined roles as far as the fact that after so many years of people in the city referring to them as GAR PACs or one entity, these men have their distinct jobs? And do you feel like each of them is well suited for that job?
Well, I never really liked the whole GAR PACs thing. I think that's just lazy.
I would agree with you.
But I think that, you know, if you draft a shooting guard, you know, you don't ask him to run point. To be a point guard. If you draft a power forward, you don't ask them to play, you know, three. You've got to play people to their strengths on the court and off the court. And what the Bulls did when they made Gar Foreman the general manager and asked him to deal with the public aspect of the job was essentially playing him out of position. And that's not necessarily his fault. That was understandable at the time. Pax was tired of dealing with the public responsibilities of the job, and they wore him down, and I could see how and why. You know, John doesn't suffer fools that well. I don't think he has to or should have to at this point of his career. Bulls had an optics problem. They were, you know, a disaster from a PR standpoint.
Just touching on something quickly, I want to follow up with not only talking about the front office, but Fred Hoiberg too. And I know Matt and I tossed this idea around a couple different times. And I felt like that this is the first real year that Fred Hoiberg has gotten the opportunity to play the team that he wants. The sort of the style that made him such a great college basketball coach. As far as what you see in Fred Hoiberg now in year three, as opposed to maybe year one and year two, do you feel better? Do you feel more confident about Fred Hoiberg and the style of coaching and him developing like these young players into the type of coach that maybe the front office thought he was going to be when they initially hired him? And how do you see that playing out?
I think he's done a fine job. I think he's grown. He's definitely matured, handles players a lot better. You are seeing him, you know, actually coach players that are coachable and have a, you know, function in his offense in a way that makes sense, and that you can see what everybody else saw about Fred Hoiberg that you mentioned at Iowa State. So, yeah, he's taken a step. I don't know if it's a major step, but it's a significant one, however size of it is, because, you know, he had a credibility issue heading into this year, and I think he's closed that gap a little bit. And, you know, you can look at him and say, yeah, I can see him being a good NBA coach with the right players and the right talent tailored for his offensive system.
Anything, any concerns there, especially now when the Bulls start to get competitive maybe 2, 3, 4 years down the road, if Fred Hoiberg is still here? Obviously, one of the biggest concerns was being able to handle a large ego, star players that might the Bulls might be able to attract 2, 3, 4 years down the road. How do you think Fred Hoiberg can handle that and learn from the mistakes that he had from Jimmy Butler or bring in Dwayne Wade or Rondo for those couple of years, or maybe even at the end of Derek's time here and Joakim Noah's time here? What would be a couple lessons that you would take away from that, and you think Fred Hoiberg can learn from that going forward?
Well, I don't want to sound like Fred's apologist, because I was tough on him and will continue to be if necessary, but think about the guys who you just mentioned, okay? Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, and Rajon Rondo. Those are some three pretty headstrong players. Those are three pretty strong individuals. You give those guys to a young coach who doesn't have NBA experience, and they are going to take advantage of situations and be, you know, I think Jimmy was the one who introduced the term alpha male to the Bulls lexicon. These are guys that made it difficult. Great players, but I wouldn't say they're the easiest to coach. So that's a hard situation. I don't think that Fred Hoiberg is a shrinking violet in the league. I think that you have to understand this is the guy that's competitive. Talk to him one-on-one, and you see the ways that, you know, he expresses himself. This is not a guy who's a walkover, and I think that perception has been painted in Chicago because of the difficulties and the challenges that existed in coaching the guys that you mentioned. Derrick Rose was a great NBA player in Chicago, but a very enigmatic one. So I don't know that any coaching situation is going to be ordinary or normal or routine, especially in the NBA. But Fred got off to a rocky start because wasn't the team he thought he was going to coach, and he had some very strong personality to try to manage, and that's difficult.
You mentioned the strong personalities being that great challenge for Fred Hoiberg in his first couple of years, and I think everybody in Chicago would agree with you there, and Jimmy Butler in particular. And David, I'm just curious, I want to get your thoughts on who Jimmy Butler, the personality was, because you've been covering this Bulls team since he came into the league as a rookie in 2011, a quiet kid that nobody really knew all that much about, the 30th pick from Marquette. You know, if you're not a Marquette basketball fan, you probably hadn't seen much of him. And he had that, you know, that catchphrase, just a kid from Tomball, Texas. And as his talent grew and as the spotlight in Chicago on him got brighter because of the fading spotlights on guys like Rose and Joakim Noah, it seemed like there was a pretty dramatic shift in the personality of who Jimmy Butler, the person, was, and that ego got a heck of a lot bigger, and he's making late night talk show appearances and cameos in Hollywood films and getting all this attention with the Mac contract and the endorsements. Do you think that Jimmy Butler deserves some fault for the way that era of Bulls basketball fell apart? And do you wish him well now that he's in Minnesota?
Well, I think, yeah, you always wish him well. I mean, I think it's one of those things where you respect anybody that makes himself into that good of a player. And I do. And you don't want to take anything away from that. But Jimmy became a diva. There's no question about it. He was a basketball diva. And his ego became unmanageable from the Bulls standpoint. And if that weren't the case, he'd still be in Chicago. I firmly believe that Jimmy's personality contributed greatly to their feeling like they had to move him, because if they didn't move him then and took advantage of selling high, they would have had to reach a point where they're going to have to make another long-term commitment financially that they weren't ready to make because of some things that just they had peaked with Jimmy Butler. He was, you know, he started in his own movie. And he lived every day like that, I thought. Look, I was critical of Jimmy. I don't think he made his teammates necessarily better. He made the Bulls better because he was a tremendous player who became a closer, and he played both ends of the court. But I don't know that, you know, one example is probably a bad example, but, you know, Nico Mirotić thrived this year with the Bulls largely because Jimmy Butler was gone. And, you know, I don't think he made Nico better. I'm not sure he made everybody around him better. So I respected what he did on the court, but I was never a big fan of Jimmy Butler, the diva.
Just to kind of counter that point, there's obviously the reports in Cleveland too, and I know we keep touching on former Bulls players, but I think it's important to understand kind of in hindsight, looking back at what happened last year and obviously the big personalities there, but sort of how we got to this point and where this culture can be shaped and lessons that the Bulls can learn, not only the players, but the front office and the coaching staff. I look at Dwayne Wade and what he was brought in to do for one single season was to sort of be that veteran, that leadership. And I think for a lot of reasons, I think Jimmy Butler sort of latched onto some of those, and some of those characteristics that you didn't necessarily want Dwayne Wade to rub off on happened to Jimmy Butler. Now that you see that happened, and there's reports that Dwayne Wade was part of the reason why the Kevin Love situation happened, do you feel like that now with the culture that the team has and the way that the team has been saying that this team is very tight, the tight-knit group in the core that they have, do you feel like that can last here, or is there still kind of a lingering feeling that, all right, we kind of trust this, but just kind of waiting for another incident to happen?
Well, I think Wade probably, you know, the point of his career where, yeah, he may have been more of a locker room lawyer than maybe anybody realized. I would accept that. I mean, the reports aren't good out of Cleveland. The reports weren't good in Chicago necessarily in terms of his way he communicated with younger players. Great for the community, maybe not so great for the locker room. But I'm not going to give Jimmy Butler a pass because Dwayne Wade showed up in Chicago. I think that I saw firsthand how Jimmy had changed and how success changed Jimmy Butler. I saw that enough to know that it wasn't just because Dwayne Wade's presence of last year maybe brought more of that to the surface. It was pretty much an issue before Dwayne Wade came to town. So, look, both tremendous basketball players, all-star caliber guys, but I think the Bulls, they picked the right lane and they chose to go young.
And shifting our focus back to the present with this young Bulls core, David, it sounds like you wouldn't necessarily mind if the Bulls pile up some wins here in the final 25 games, even with these changes in the lineup, that you don't necessarily want the focus to be on quote-unquote tanking and losing as many games as possible. Given the fact that the Bulls have this very soft schedule to round out the season, they're right now slotted eighth, and it's very possible, almost likely, that instead of winding up somewhere 1 through 5, they'll be picking somewhere 5 through 10. So with that in mind, are there some of those second tier lottery guys in this 2018 draft class that you're particularly high on or think will be a great fit for this Bull, this young Bulls team moving forward?
Well, I don't feel qualified yet to evaluate 5 through 10. I mean, the first five are really probably dynamic guys that are going to make somebody's draft night very enjoyable. The rest of the first round, I haven't frankly studied enough to know, you know, who's 7th, who's 9th, who should be 12th. I'm not a draft Nick yet. It's a long time before then. All I can tell you is that, yes, this is a deep draft. Yes, this is a draft of the top 4 or 5 guys are considered, you know, franchise-type players. But I would also ask you to remember or ask yourself the question, where was Lauri Markkanen chosen? Okay. He was 7th. Right. There are some players that if you get through 5 through 10, that can still you feel very good about. And next year at this time, where was Donovan Mitchell drafted? Yeah, I think the draft certainly is a predictor of success, but not guaranteeing anything. And that's what you have to remember. And I don't know if I can, you know, tell you they're going to be much better off or worse off at 9th through 6th or whatever. Certainly, if they're in the top 5, they're in good shape. But again, I'm not going to let that uncertainty guide me now. I would, as an observer, if you want to root for them, that's your right to root for them to lose. That's great. That's not what sports are all about to me. So while I get it, I don't have to like it.
David, I want to ask you more specifically about, obviously, the top 5 talent in draft. It's pretty much everybody's saying that this is going to be the top talent, that you pretty much can't swing and miss on any of these guys. It brought a question up a couple weeks ago that we kind of tossed out the idea that is it still possible in the way the NBA is shaped right now, the way the NBA is going, is it possible to win? And if you're going to draft a big man, a center, somebody like DeAndre Ayton or Mohamed Bamba, is it possible to still win a championship when you focus your attention in your team around a big guy, a franchise changing big guy, somebody like that turned into Andre Drummond or Hassan Whiteside down in Miami? Is that still possible in this day and age where threes and fast paced often seem to be the capitalistic, the way to go in the NBA? Do you still think that it's possible to win with a big man that is your number one?
Possible, but I don't know that I would think that's a great fit for the Bulls, honestly. I mean, I think you would not complain, but the game's not going that way, as you point out. I mean, it doesn't seem to be. Trends are cyclical, certainly. That's why they're trends, but I don't know that that's a great fit. Any of those guys you're going to fit, you can fit in, right? I mean, that's going to be the situation. All those guys have the talent that you're going to say, okay, we're thrilled, we can make this work. But yeah, the two that you mentioned, yeah, I don't know that that's that would definitely defy the odds. I mean, and it would certainly be a different way of doing things. It's not conventional. It's not popular in the last few weeks. But Trae Young, boy, I tell you, you look at a guy who would definitely make you think twice about methods of winning. You know, he has tailed off, but I don't know if there's been as dynamic of a college basketball player in a long time. Just everything he can do. There's some great players at the top, and I think the Bulls, if they're lucky enough to get one of them, they'll find a way to fit them in.
Final question for you here. I'm going to list off 5 guys' names that are currently on the Bulls right now. I want you to give me a percentage from 0 to 100. in terms of if this, they're going to be a part of this team 3 years down the road. So we're talking about 2020, 2021. Five players that I'm pretty interested in. And so I'm going to start with Chris Dunn. Odds that Chris Dunn is still a part of this core in 2020, 2021?
I think 95.
How about Denzel Valentine?
70.
Jerian Grant?
10.
Bobby Portis?
85.
David Nwaba.
30.
I'll add one more. Cristiano Felicio.
7.
I want to go back to your Bobby Portis one real fast, though. 30%. Why do you think Bobby Portis would only be 30% possibility?
I don't think Bobby Portis is 30%. I think I said 85%.
Oh, 85%. Okay. I was going to say, I'm a little curious about Bobby Portis.
No, I'm sorry if that didn't come across. Bobby Portis is a player that made a lot of news for the wrong reasons in October. And all through that, you wondered, what the heck are they going to do? How are they going to handle this? But never have the Bulls wavered about this one thing. He's a part of their future. He's a core player. And if you look at, and I know you guys watch it as closely as anybody, it would be hard to find a more consistent player for the Bulls this year than Bobby Portis.
Yeah, and he's been a stud.
That's a surprise to me. Maybe it shouldn't be, but this is how you can win with moving forward. Just tell him to control his anger, and you got a player.
All right, so you're telling us, David, you're telling us that you were Team Bobby when the Bobby-Nico feud was happening.
I'm telling you that I vacillated like everybody else for a long time, and then I wanted to see who was responsible, but that was a tough situation. I would never condone a teammate punching another teammate. But there was more to it than met the eye, and I think the Bulls handled
that
well.
No pun intended there.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not doing puns. Sorry.
No worries. Well, we appreciate the time. He's David Haw. You can get all of his great Chicago sports content via the Chicago Tribune. You can also catch him making appearances on NBC Sports Chicago and WSCR AM 670 The Score. Follow him on Twitter at David Haw. David, thanks for the chat, man. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Want to thank our guest from the Chicago Tribune, David Haw, for joining us. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at David Haw. You can follow us on social media at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. We'll be back tomorrow to lead you into the weekend with a ton of Bulls content, react to the Bulls game against the 76ers on Thursday, and so much more. But for Jordan and Matt, and for our guest David Haw, we are out. Have a great night.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.